Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car repair. And you're more than welcome to join us. This is how you do it. You just give us a call. Gil will answer the phone. This is a live show, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, a car problem, if you have a dilemma, I'm certainly willing to help you work through that. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Thompson's has been around in Mesa since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. They do a great and high level amount of automotive service. They have friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle may be due for service. The other day I'm going north on the 101 and one of Thompson's tow trucks is in front of me. I was really impressed that he honked his horn and let a car pull in front of him. And he was using his turn signals. And I actually called Brian and said, I know you get a lot of bad calls probably, but I want to tell you a good call. And I want to tell you how impressed I am with your tow truck driver. And Brian was pretty proud of that and said actually he doesn't get much traffic about how bad his drivers, that he gets better return on how good they are. So that's the kind of guy Brian is, who owns Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Okay, last week we talked about should you get other estimates. And that opened the floodgates with respect to people's ideas. Now, I only accept the two different documents. So the first document is from shop A, the second document is from shop B. They're completely, you know, the same. They have the same line items with a total and then a documentation that the total is reflected on where they had the work done. So I have something in front of me. Honda store versus an independent. This happened August 14th, which is how many days ago? 5 days ago? Okay, the Honda store says the oil pan is $135, but the independent says it's $162. So, attaboy for the Honda store. The sealant is $23 at the Honda store, and it's $10 at the independent shop. Point for this independent shop. The lower engine cover is $65 at the Honda store, and it's $102 at the independent store. So right now it looks like the independent is not doing very well. Oh, here's another one. The oil and filters, $35 at the Honda store, and it's $55 at the independent store. Oh, it's not looking good for the independent. Oh, wait a minute. The labor. The independent shop bids the labor at $281, and the Honda charges $552. I think that just changed everything. $281 versus $552. Now, the shop supplies environmental charges for the Honda store adds up to 9%. The environmental and shop supply charges at the independent store adds up to 7.5%. So there's really no big deal. What you can draw from this is this. The independent shop had higher prices for some of the proprietary parts they have to put on your Honda. So it's not like everybody has a front cover or everybody has an oil pan. Sometimes you have to go to the dealer. So their prices are higher because they're certainly not going to be able to, they buy it at what they sell it for. But the labor was a big deal. $281 versus $553. So here's the bottom line. The Honda estimate was $883. Out the door, the customer went at the independent shop for $668 versus $883. That's $200 difference. That's a whole lot more than 20%. And I'm doing some of this math in my head.
I was going to say, you need a calculator?
I don't have one. I dropped mine in the studio the other day, and it broke in half. And I tried to fix it because you know I can fix anything.
Yeah.
And I couldn't fix it. So put it on your list that when we go to Walmart, Mark needs a new calculator.
Yeah.
My wife is sitting
Phil
here
next
to me.
Phil is your first caller, Phil.
So anyway, with respect to this dealer versus an independent shop. Again, the final totals were, the dealer's estimate was $883, and they actually had the work done at the independent shop for $667. That's kind of how it works. I've got one other example, but I've also got Bill on the line. Bill, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Phil,
go ahead.
Yeah, so, hi. So I have a 99 Ford F-250, and I have some AC problems. I've charged the system and checked it. It's working because it's, you know, it's condensing water. So, and it blows cold air. When I start the truck up, it's stuck in defrost, and you can feel cold air blowing. And then it defaults back. You can feel it. You can hear it. The selector default back to defrost and heat. And then it's mixing with hot air, so I'm effectively not getting AC in my truck, although the unit's working. I believe it to be a vacuum problem. I guess my question directly is that, is the vacuum problem under the dash on the interior of the truck, or is it the firewall in the engine compartment?
Okay.
Where do I start looking for that vacuum problem?
Wow. Phil, you've gone from describing the symptoms to all of a sudden coming to the conclusion that you have a vacuum problem. And I think that jump is too wide. I don't think that's in your best interest. Let me ask you some questions.
Okay.
When you say that it blows hot, have you ever hopped out of the truck and grabbed a hold of the suction line off the air compressor? Because if it's ice cold, then the blend door is probably the problem. And the blend door is like a Y. And there's a door where the confluence is of the two Y's. And the blend door swings to the right, and it gets cold air from the left side of the Y. But it, if it swings left, it shuts off the cold air and gives you hot air. However, there's lots of other reasons for you to have lukewarm or hot air when the air conditioning's on. So we could have a problem with too much head pressure if you didn't exactly charge the system exactly with the 3.2 ounces it calls for, or 3 pounds, 2 ounces, or whatever it is. So there's lots of things. And so at the very beginning, when you have, forget, we're going to talk about this in two different things. One is the temperature doesn't always match. I just need to know if the cold side of the compressor is cold. I need to know if the clutch is running on the front. That's an important
consideration. Okay, so the cold side is cold. It is running, and it's working.
Okay.
And it, you can hear the door shut as you accelerate the truck. Then the door will it'll start off cold, and only in the defrost. That's the thing. It never comes out the panel,
okay,
the dash panel. So it only comes out the defrost, and it's fairly cold. It's not ice cold.
Okay.
So I feel that it's mixing with warm air, an assumption.
Okay.
And then as you're driving, under acceleration, you hear that door close, and then it's baking hot air. That's why I jumped to a vacuum problem controlling the door. But
well,
that's why I jumped there. But
yeah,
you can hear
but
the
how
door
is
close.
It that we have a vacuum problem that works? How is it that we have the door opening and closing, and the absence of vacuum is between your ears? How do we get to that point?
Okay, well, so let's say it's not vacuum then.
Okay.
Okay. At any rate, you can hear the door close.
Okay, I've heard that already. I'm going to get to that. You have a blend door problem. You don't have a vacuum problem. You have a blend door problem. It's a 99. It's very likely that somebody's dropped something down the defrost vents, because you're going to find Crayolas, you're going to find a cheeseburger, you're going to find, you know, in the worst case, a pair of underwear that you better not be yanking out of that dash when your wife is around. You're going to see something down on that blend door. Now, it could be that the blend door is just dirty. So sometimes you go in there and you go, God, look at this mess, because there's a Coca-Cola and some French fries. So you clean up the blend door and then manually apply and unapply vacuum, and bingo, it's fine. But the mere fact that it opens and closes and you can hear that happens eliminates a vacuum problem. Now, the only thing that you can do is there's going to be a small vacuum line that comes from the intake manifold. It may go through a round grapefruit size pod and then be fed through the firewall. That's the vacuum supply for the entire dashboard. Now, I want you to engine off. I want you to disconnect the line from the port, and I want you to look inside the port. If the port is, and this is an exaggeration to help you create a visual for you, if the port is the size of a pencil, but you could hardly stick the lead of a pencil through the carbon in that port, then you have to clean that port out. So you're going to get your little dental pick and the motor's not running during this time, and you get your vacuum shotgun, and you just start reaching in there and start pulling that out. Even if it goes in, it's no big deal. If it gets behind the valve, it'll be crushed. Everything will be fine after a mile we're driving. Now, what that would mean is we have vacuum delayed. So it takes a minute for us to build up enough vacuum by the restriction. So the fact that it opens and closes has nothing to do with the supply, but it may have to do with the amount, volume of vacuum.
The volume. So, yeah. The volume.
Now,
that makes sense.
I don't know. Have you ever taken a dashboard apart?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. If you, because on a 1 to 10 scale, to go in and get the blend door and come back out without creating a bunch of problems, and I've done many of those, and so has my staff. This is a number 8 on a 1 to 10 scale. So I'm just telling you, getting in and getting out without creating stuff or without breaking the clips or without causing damage is a very difficult thing.
Minutes.
So, but if you've done lots of other work and on my marks one to 10 scale, is an 8th, and you're not afraid of that, then yeah, just dig right in, but disconnect the battery.
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, Bill. No. Thank you very much.
Phil.
I got Phil written down.
You got Bill on the brain for some reason.
No, I do. I do. I'm going to write his name right there in that caller. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Real quick.
That was 25%, by the way.
Oh, it is?
The
25% discount. It was otherwise on the Honda versus Independent Shop.
Right.
There was a 25% difference between the total price of the Honda store and the total price of the Independent. And the purpose is simple. It's just on those big tickets, look around.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You have nothing to lose. And in this case, the customer saved 25%.
Right.
All right. Real quick, another one. A blue Ford Escape.
Okay.
A Ford. Did you hear me say that?
1 minute.
It's
doesn't matter to me.
F-O-R-D. Okay. Fixed or repaired daily. I think that's what it stands for, but I'm not sure. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just making fun of Ford.
Sure you are.
Okay. here's the shakedown on this one. The dealer estimate is a whopping $925.28. Now, bid and repaired.
They did that. Okay, go
bid
ahead.
Bid and repaired. Here's the two numbers difference. One more time, $925.28.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was done and repaired for $175.89.
So they didn't need a bunch of the stuff that they said they did.
One way or another, there was some big malfunctions here. Now, what they did was this was an air conditioning issue originally.
Mm-hmm.
And they had check AC blows warm and freezes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and then there's a modification on the cowl per a technical service bulletin. So the checkout was 45. The modify the cowl was 118, and that's all they really had besides shop supplies and environmental charges.
Mm-hmm.
The other estimate talks about $99 for labor. I think it's the checkout. Then they talk about that's the total labor price. And then they have AC recharge and diagnose $389. But, of course, that wasn't done because that wasn't what was needed.
Right.
Evacuate and recharge for $174. So their diag is $389. The other guy's diag was $45.
Wow.
Then we've got $174 to evacuate and recharge, which is more expensive than ours is.
Mm-hmm.
I can only compare it to them. They have $49 to replace the blower motor resistor, which had nothing to do with the problem.
Yeah.
And the blower motor resistor gives you fan speeds 1, 2, 3, and 4. No, mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3, and then a relay gives you 4.
Okay.
4 is doesn't go through a resistor. Then they have to replace the accumulator. Well, that was not part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The final repair was a technical service bulletin update.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they've got modified cowl panel per Ford for $124. That was it. But
that
all this other was superfluous.
Yeah, stuff.
Stuff. So $124.50, and the other place performed the cowl for $118.
Mm-hmm.
My point is it's not. I'm not beating up the dealers because there's one guy that has the other way around, but he didn't provide me the paperwork just yet. But it's always possible it can be the other way around.
Right.
But there's 25%. Give me a percentage on the other one. Take the 928 and divide it by.
No, do it the other way.
The other way around.
175.
Okay, 175. Just do 175 divided by 928, and that percentage is
About 80%. 82 or something like that.
All right. So that's a big thing. 602-508-0960. We're not beating up on anybody. We're just trying to educate you the very best we can. And we're admitting that sometimes this is tilted the other way. But these are the examples that we have in front of us. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Hey everybody, Mark Salem here on KKNT every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car repair problems, your problems, my problems, our problems.
Well, we couldn't finish your problems in 2 hours.
Well, that
so
commercial just said,
mind.
What is it, big lose on meds like you too?
Yeah.
and I take Alka-Seltzer before I eat your dinner.
Oh, so. Funny. Or so after you eat yours.
Yeah, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us, you can. But right now, we have Raul on the line.
Oh, very funny. Paul.
It's Paul. Okay, yeah. It's Paul. Paul, I'm sorry. I just can't read my handwriting this morning. Plus, I'm aggravating my wife, so forgive me. But how can I help you, buddy?
Hey, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. Hey, I have actually, it's my daughter. She has a 2015 Cadillac ATS. Just turned 50,000 miles. And brought it to the, she's been getting and complaining to me, of course, about a, in the seat she's been getting at red light idle. She's been getting a shaking in the seat. She could feel it. She says, Dad, I feel it right in the seat of my pants in the car. And it's intermittent. It's not all the time. So upon two visits to the dealer, they replaced one engine mount. Second engine mount was done yesterday. And to me, I don't think it's an engine mount. If it were an engine mount failure, it would be a constant issue. It's not a. It wouldn't be an intermittent thing.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Okay.
And it's a 2.5 liter.
Okay. We have four mounts: front, back, left, and right. And this is a transverse engine, so it's a front wheel drive, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the motor, when you throttle up. As you stand over the hood, the motor's going to twist towards the windshield, especially if the front of the motor is on
right.
the passenger side. So it's going to twist, and so it's going to load up that mount. And,
okay.
And so that vibration's going to be there depending on where the idle's at. So it may not be there at
okay.
low idle in drive, maybe at 500 RPM, but it may be at 800 RPM, which is the difference between a cold start and a warm start. So
right.
I think they have to do the mounts first. Because it's going to get
okay.
ugly after the mounts. It's going to be a torque converter. It's going to be a transmission problem, but it's not going to be a tire problem because she's not moving. But here's what
right.
she needs to do. When it's happening, she needs to safely just toss the car into neutral. Does the vibration
okay.
go away? Because at that point, when you
got
toss it.
It
into neutral, we're now setting the motor on all four mounts. So if the problem goes
okay.
away every single time, then bingo, it's still a mount, and you've got two more to go.
right.
Now, the
yeah,
other side of the coin is this. She puts it in neutral, and it's still there. Now, the only thing that's moving at that point is the motor and the flywheel and the torque converter. There's nothing else moving,
mm-hmm.
so that's a bad thing. So that's going to necessitate
right.
some big job to pull the transmission back. First of all, diagnose whether it's a flywheel or whether you lost a weight or whether it's a torque converter or whatever. And at the minimum, they're probably going to just put both parts in there and put it back together and hope like that fixed it. If not, then they'll probably end up putting a whole transmission in it. But I don't think,
right.
I understand you're concerned about the mounts, but we need her, we need to educate her on how to help us. Because if she walks in and she says, look, when I put it in neutral, the vibration is still there. And if I put it into reverse, the vibration is still there. Now what she's saying in technical words is I'm rotating the engine clockwise and counterclockwise, so I'm loading the two side mounts, and it's still there. Well,
right.
I don't know if the service
right.
rider's going to get that.
With it in neutral.
Yeah, yeah, with it in neutral.
With that scenario, yeah.
Yeah, and in order to get a verbal contact with the technician, because you don't want – the worst part of our industry is what you say goes through a very non-technical person who's the service writer who may have
sure.
worked at McDonald's 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then they try to regurgitate this to the technician. Your daughter should write this down and tape it to the rearview mirror with her cell phone on it. She should write down everything she said, and she gives a copy to the service writer, but she tapes one to the rearview mirror. That way she's going to actually get to talk to the doctor. So that's my advice, but I think together with her, we can diagnose it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. That was Paul, mm-hmm. by the way.
You're right.
All right. IMM Auto Services in Tempe, they've been there since 1972. They prioritize your work. They offer a to-the-penny estimate, and they perform only the work that you authorize them to do. They have ASE Master Techs, and they work on domestic and most imports, but they specialize in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So if you have a Volvo in your garage along with a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, a Toyota, or a Honda, they can work on your Volvo. They can work on your Saab, your Fiat, and your Alfa Romeo. I need to tell you this. That's important because those of you with those cars, the first thing you do when you need repair is you call around and ask, do you work on Saabs? Do you work on Volvos? And most shops will say no because those are 1% of cars. Those cars don't even represent 1% of the cars on the road. But they are so difficult. It's like an elephant with 9 hearts, 9 kidneys, 9 stomachs. It's just a vehicle that's unlike everything else on the road. But IMM Auto Service is a great place to go. All righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Got a car problem? Let's discuss it. If we can talk about the symptoms, that really works well. And then if we can have some give and take, that really works well.
You don't want them to tell you what they've already done and it hasn't fixed it.
Well, it's called front counter stuff. You know that.
Yeah.
You work the front counter a lot.
Yes.
And the worst part about that is when the wife comes in and regurgitates what her husband said.
Yeah.
And it starts off with, my car doesn't blow cold air, and then here's what my husband said it was.
Right.
We would much rather know, is it slow? Is it fast? Is there water on the ground? Is the right side colder than the left side? Those are all the questions we need to ask somebody.
Right.
And so the worst part about it is the lady who comes in and regurgitates.
Or the man that tries to tell what his wife has said. So
okay, I'll give you that.
Because they're
I'll
just,
give you that.
Yeah.
And we're right across the street from Honeywell, who has like 4,000 engineers. And, you know, we have a form for them, right? Did you know that? You're not going to admit
yes,
it.
Yes, I know we do.
Okay. The form
most of the time they want to
tell us how to fix their car.
Right.
So we have a form that says, I have instructed you how to fix car. I accept full responsibility for the success of this repair. Nevertheless, I will pay you whether or not you fix it based on my diagnosis. And then we have them sign it. Then we take their thumbprint. We take a copy of their driver's license and their social security number.
There you go.
I'm
embellishing
just,
again.
I'm embellishing. You know, doggone well I am. 602-508-0960. I really do love engineers. I have so many engineers that are friends of mine. You got Jim Botsko. You've got, who's that other guy? Manning. Joe Manning. You've got all those guys that work in the field I work in, and they have my total respect.
Okay.
The problem is Joe has a master's degree in hydrology, and he's doing accident reconstruction. Or at least I think it was him. I don't really remember.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just getting deeper, aren't I?
You are.
We still got an hour and a half of show left.
Watch out. Yes.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. Renee's sitting here next to me. We'll be back right after this. Well, my name's Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars every Saturday here from 10 to 12. If you'd like to join us, we have three lines available still. 602-508-0960. Nothing's off limits. If you got something to say it, but just don't use bad language. Steve, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. I know Alan would be more sympathetic to me with this Ford question than you would be. So I'm going to give it my best shot, though.
Okay.
I have a 2000 Ford F-350 Super Duty Dually 7.3 power stroke with a 410 rear end, and I'm towing fifth wheel.
Okay.
We've talked several million times, Mark, and I used to be in the 97 F-250 that was not an adequate truck for the fifth wheel I was towing.
Okay.
But now I am. I'm towing 37 feet. Dry weight of the trailer is approximately 10,000 pounds. My wife generously loads this trailer with about another 1,800 pounds, and I've had the trailer weighed out with all of her garb and a little bit of my water and
toilet paper and stuff like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
My issue was towing from here to the San Diego area, northeast San Diego area, to Ramona. And I took Interstate 10 to the 60, going the 15 south. And I'm about 6.5-7 hours in to the run because we stopped for dogs and lunch and what have you. When I got to the Ramona area and positioning the fifth wheel, I was in a really uphill site for my fifth wheel, and it took me several minutes to get this back and in procedure because it was so narrow, and I'm back and forth in reverse, and all of a sudden my transmission started spewing fluid.
Okay.
Right as I got to the end of having the truck in reverse for several minutes and backing up back and forth, I had to put about 3/4 of a quart of fluid once the truck had cooled down the next day and what have you. My question to you is, the truck's completely stock, with the stock additional little dinky transmission cooler, in the front of everything on the truck. And I'm a little concerned, towing in the summer, do I need more transmission cooling?
No, you've explained exactly why it burped a bunch of fluid. You just got it hot. You got it this big 8,000 pound and could be 10,000 pound trailer behind you, and you're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and the motor isn't running a bunch of fluid through the cooler, and if it does, there's no airflow across the cooler. And if it's only 3/4 of a quart, what you're telling me is that there's a full mark and an ad mark, and you were closer to the ad mark than the full mark. And so you use 3/4 to bring it to the full mark or thereabouts. There's nothing you can do about that. The only thing you could do about that would be put an electric fan in front of the transmission cooler that you would use when that maneuver happens again. I suggest the money that kind of expense would just be a waste of your money. Let me tell you the good news. The good news is Alan last Thursday passed his ASE diesel certification. And today he's in Utah with a bunch of our customers who are out riding their Jeeps. And they invited him, in my opinion, to go along so they all had their personal mechanic, because he has created all of their Jeeps. And so we've teased him a lot about that, and he did take his tools, and these are very good customers, good friends of ours. But your 7.3 is perfect. Here's my question to you about your trailer. Real quick, this is off the subject. What's the gross combined weight of your F-350? Do you know?
You know, this was my maiden voyage in it, and I didn't look at my door sticker.
It's not there.
It's
not there. Gross vehicle weight rating is there. Gross vehicle weight rating. But gross combined is this. Truck, load, fuel, people, beer, and trailer plus its load. So you have four things. The truck, the trailer, the load in the truck, the load in the trailer. That's gross combined. It's GCWR. I think that you might be flirting with that number. And I also think that you're going to find that the curb weight and the loaded weight is more likely less than your 1,800, and it's more likely about 1,000. And so I'm not telling you what to tell your wife to bring and not to bring. I'm simply trying to prevent the calamity from happening where you hurt the truck, or you get stopped and they weigh you, and then they, you know, tell you to drop the trailer and go find a truck that can haul the trailer, or, you know, you have to take stuff out of it, transfer it to the truck so that the trailer's not overloaded, but then you run the risk of having the truck overloaded, and that's if they stop you and run you through a weigh station. So I'm just concerned about that. But as far as your transmission cooler and your transmission burp is concerned, the only hazard here is this. Transmission fluid is highly flammable. So it's the same as power steering fluid. So I would be concerned about that. What you might want to do is just put a 3/4 inch hose over the dipstick onto the dipstick tube and put a small clamp there. Have that hose like 3 feet long and run it down by the passenger side firewall. So if it does burp fluid, it will go down on the ground and not all over the manifold on the passenger side of the car or the truck. So, and then if you need to check the dip, you just take a little quarter inch nut driver, take the clamp off, pull the hose off, and check the fluid. So that would be an easy way to eliminate a fire. But I really think you explained it perfectly why you overheated that transmission. And if I were your buddy, I'd go anywhere you wanted to go in that Power Stroke, that 7.3 Power Stroke, because I wouldn't worry about that little bit of oil that you lost. So thank you very much for bringing that up. Rob, we're going to get to you, but I've got to take a break. And, Rob, you'll be my first caller. Please stay there. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back, everybody. The lines are open, except for one, 602-508-0960. I'm going to take Rob right now, like I promised. Rob, how can I help you?
First of all, I'd like to thank you, Mark, for your public education on a fix or a guess. I think that's helping everybody.
Thank you.
And thank you. I wanted to ask you about a 2004 Honda Accord. Started off, we had to replace the starter, and on the way back from that, basically the engine light came on. I wasn't sure, and pretty much, or I guess this was the next day, the system wasn't charging. The volts weren't charging. So took it back. We thought it was an alternator. Was not an alternator. So the mechanic puts the alternator back on. He talked to an associate shop that said it's a computer problem, not telling the alternator to go ahead and operate. And so he did a temporary fix for me in that he ran a wire to a source that's hot when the ignition's running as a temporary fix, I guess, or I can run it that way so that my charging system will operate. So my question is, do I find out how much a computer is from a shop that deals with computers? Do I get my computer reflashed? I'm just not real familiar with computer problems. I mean, I think you should just be able to replace the alternator and it should work, but okay. It's not the case anymore.
I have a few comments. I think it's terrible that we had the starter checked and they condemned the starter when the line on when a starter's good and bad is pretty doggone simple. So the starter can't drop the battery below 9.6 and a fully charged battery is 13. So that's pretty simple. And obviously we want to test the starter after it's hot. And that's pretty simple. So all we do is pull you into a bay after you've driven it a long time, or maybe you're on your way home, and pull you into a bay, pop the hood, and pull the coil wire, disable the ignition system because we don't want it to start up. And we just take a digital volt ohmmeter and grab the battery terminals and say, all righty, Rob, hit it. And if the battery goes from 13 to 11.8, and we do that three or four times and it never changes, then it's not the battery and it's not the starter. However, we've transitioned now to a no charge system, and then somebody you've never met before is now telling you it's a computer. That should bother you. That should bother you a lot, because I can't do that either. And I've never replaced a computer on a Honda or any other car for the symptoms you describe. I'll tell you, I would never let one of my technicians wire around a circuit, because that's the recipe for that car catching fire. And if I were you, I wouldn't park that car in the garage until you get this problem fixed, because I'm scared for you and your family. If that car catches fire, like Fords do in the garages, it takes the house with it. So there's a certain amount of Fords that have this brake light switch. It's a 9.6 million person recall, and it's a 10-cent fuse fix. But in your particular case, I'd be concerned about that. What really has to happen is, and I can't believe that the computer is telling the alternator to come on or come off. I think you have another connection problem, if that's even the case. So the fact that he triggered the alternator or the regulator by going to an ignition source tells me that at least he's on the right track. But the computer's not. So if you wanted to do this, if you wanted to play hardball, you could say to him, I'm willing to pay for whatever you think the repair is, but I'm not paying for guessing, so I'm going to pay with a credit card. And if it doesn't work, I'm not going to pay you. So that's all there is to it. So you're telling me this is a firm diagnosis. You're telling me this is a fix and not a guess. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. People say that to me, and I'm the origination of that conversation. And I look him in the eye and I said, you know what? You've been a customer of mine for 5 years. I'll let you take it home for a week. And if it's fixed, come on back and pay your bill. And if it's not fixed, then don't come back. So that's it. I'm really concerned about the diagnosis, especially from someone you've never met and you have no idea of his certifications. To reflash the computer
he is my mechanic, and he was honest with me. I mean, in that he did not. He put an alternator on there that did not fix it. He took it back off and put my old alternator back on. I mean, he is not trying to, his shop, he is not going to try to attempt the problem, to fix the problem. I mean, he's saying it's a problem beyond, you know, his fix, and this was a temporary fix. But, I mean, he's not trying to sell me a computer, but that's, from talking to an associate shop, that's what they're suggesting the problem is. But I'm kind of looking for, you know, a solution now.
Okay. Well, like I said, Rob, somebody is diagnosing this problem. I didn't say it was your shop. It was clear to me that he had called somebody else. But you've never met this guy he talked to. You don't know about this guy's credentials. And he's guessing based on somebody's eyesight. To put it in perspective, I'm not going to give your shop credit for putting the alternator on and taking it off, and I'll tell you why. Because if he would have put the alternator on and charged you and let you go, this problem would have resurfaced. It would have come back to bite him. So he's smart enough to know that. I am going to give him credit for that. But a lot of other shops would not have dealt with it that way. They would have sent you out the door. The fix is going to be someone has to go in and diagnose this problem. They have to open up a wiring diagram, and they have to say, where does this trigger come from? And does it go through the ignition switch? Does it go through a relay? Does it go through the distributor? Where does this trigger come from? He's done a lot of the work for somebody else because he's wired around it. And so if he's using an ignition source that's going to light the alternator, then when the key's on, boom, the alternator's working. So it's just a matter of reading a diagram and finding out where the power's not coming from. So if it comes out of pin 32 of the computer when you cycle the key on, then you go to pin 32. It's there. You turn the key on and off, power goes on and off. So then you go to the other end of the wire, you cycle the key on and off, and there's nothing there. So you go somewhere between point A and point B. We got a problem. You look at the wiring diagram and you track it down. I think that this is going to run you somewhere no less than 75, and depending on where they find the problem, upwards to 200 in diagnostics. But I think this is what's going to happen. It's $137.50 to find it, and it's $10 to fix it. I'm going to guess, because that's what it sounds like to me. It's going to be some bad connection. It's going to be some broken wire. It's going to be something like that. One other thing is all the fuse panel has a key on side of the fuse panel and then a power all the time fuse panel. So the power all the time is not dependent on the key. So that's your hazards, that's your parking lights, that's your dome lights, all the things that work with the key in your pocket. Everything else that works with your key to the on position, like air conditioning, your radio and stuff like that, that's on what we call the key side. I would think that area is the area of concern. And I would think that that's where I would be looking first. I'd be looking backwards. But I'm quite sure, and I know I'm 50% right about this, it's going to be X amount to find it, and it's going to be nothing to fix it. It's going to be cheap. So perhaps...
Last quick question is, independent Honda shop from Mesa, I'm in Mesa, or somebody that's used to dealing with Hondas, it sounds like a little more than just a common problem.
Okay. Well, you can think that, and you can base your plan on that, but this isn't going to be a hard problem. I bid this at 75 on the low side. That's 3/4 of an hour for most shops. I don't think reading a manual, a wiring diagram of your Honda is any different than reading one from a Toyota. I don't see a gray-haired master technician struggling with your Honda, but certainly you're more than, you know, well to take it wherever you want. If you're going to take it anywhere, then take it to the dealer and get them to give you what the diagnostic fee is, and then under the best of conditions, they'll come back to you and regurgitate what I just told you. X amount to find it, this much to fix it. That's kind of what I don't know anything about the Honda store in Mesa, so I'm incapable of saying yes or no. I'm just sorry. I don't.
I'm talking independent, not a dealer.
I understand.
I was asking for independent, not.
Yeah. No, I understand that you were. Yeah, I understand you were talking about an Independent, or at least that's the way I took it. So, if you're in Mesa, you can try Thompson's. I know he's a good guy, and I know his technicians are masters. I mean, they're very, very good. But you can just say to them, I've lost the trigger to the alternator. This guy added this wire in. Can you figure out where I lost that circuit? That's the question. So, like I say,
okay.
All right, good luck with you, Rob. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. And as a matter of fact, this is kind of the problem that we just talked about, Rob, with his Honda. This is exactly what Bob at Larry Harker's Auto just salivates for. He is a world-class diagnostician on just about any car, and all you have to do is wave that proverbial red flag in front of the bull and say to him, gosh, I've been all over town and nobody can fix this car. Would you like to look at it? And that's exactly what you should do, because he's really good. Now, Bob's wife, Ellen, runs the front counter and runs the phones and all that kind of stuff, but Bob is in charge of the shop. And like I said, he is probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. And there might be five of them on my list, and I'm not even on my list. I think it'd be a little self-serving. So anyway, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's been around since 1967, and he's a good guy, I promise you. Okay, something that bothers me. Can we talk about it? Hey, let me turn your microphone up.
Okay.
Something that bothers me. You know these Ford police cars? That
yes.
have some kind, they're causing the policemen to drive the cars off the road and stuff.
Right.
Here's what bothers me about that. How can you say that you're not responsible for it unless you know what it is? Okay? For instance, I'm going to say that I don't know what's the matter with your car, but it's not my fault. Yes, I just did a bunch of work on it, but I don't know what's the matter with your car, but it's not my fault. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. So I can't say it's not my fault. And Ford, in my opinion, has said, oh, well, it is their fault. But we don't know what it is.
Right.
And the idea of carbon monoxide, the carbon monoxide is supposed to come out of the tailpipe.
Sure.
Now, you'll notice on some of those pictures, they've put this little chrome tip on some of those cars.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if is that from the factory, if that's a modification. But when the car goes down the road fast, there's a vacuum back there that's created as the car zooms through the air. Behind it, there's a vacuum. So that vacuum may very well recirculate the exhaust forward. That's assuming they have their windows down. That's assuming that they have their air conditioning on normal as opposed to recirculation. And then they come up with, well, it's probably to do with the installation of the radio equipment and all that kind of stuff. That's from the engine compartment. There's no CO, there's no carbon monoxide up at the engine compartment. It's at the tailpipe.
Okay.
And if there's an exhaust leak, there would be a tick, tick, tick noise. And if there was carbon monoxide coming from the engine compartment, then the grill in front of the windshield is where air comes in under your normal mode of your air conditioning. So if the carbon monoxide was underneath the hood, then there would be a lot more than policemen
yeah.
out there that are complaining.
Right.
And so this whole idea of it's not our fault, and then they don't add, but we don't know what it is. So I think that this is my plan. What do you think about this?
Okay.
I think that they should put all the board of directors from Ford in these police cars.
Let them drive them.
Let them drive them for a while.
Under the same circumstances
that
the cops do.
I think they would fix this problem a lot sooner if they had the board of directors driving these police cars.
Yeah, they probably
and
would.
I'll bet that the board of directors wouldn't have their families and their kids in the car with them. So I sympathize with the police department, but my underwear is a tad wadded up when I hear someone say, it's not my fault, but that word it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for you.
It doesn't.
I say to you, well, who wrecked your truck? And I said, I don't know who wrecked my truck. And you said, well, you're the last one to drive it. You're the only one that drives it.
But you know what it is, so I don't get that.
No, I don't. I'm not going to admit I know what it is.
Okay.
Okay. 602-508-0960. We have another hour to go, so if you'd like to join us, you can. And Gil's given me the 1 minute segment.
Yep.
And so let me just tell you about Kurt's Auto. He's at I-17 in Bell. He's a great guy. Eric is one of his technicians, and he's a master tech. He's really good. And so we'll be back right after this.
Well, welcome back, everybody. For the next hour, we're here talking about cars, and we're at your service. So, obviously, if you'd like to call in, the lines are wide open, and Gil is not sleeping. 602-508-0960. You call that number. Gil will answer. He'll ask you what your name is, and he'll put you in queue, and then he'll say into my ears, you need to talk to Sally. And then I'll get to you just as quickly as I can. 602-508-0960. I was talking about Kurtz before. I was so rudely interrupted by my own mistake. By my own mistake. Folks, I made a mistake. A mistake in front of perhaps 10 people.
Yeah.
Because I'm told by everybody that that's all that listens to the show.
Okay.
But the fact is, I made a mistake last hour. I bailed at 58 minutes instead of 58:50.
Right.
And so I apologize for that. But I'm going to apologize to Kurtz because I never finished his spot. He's proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair shop, and he was recognized as this year's Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner. That says a lot. Since they opened their doors in 1987, Kurtz Auto Repair has been working on both domestic and import, both gas and diesel. They have Jeff, that's an ASE Master Tech that handles the front counter, and then they have Eric, who's the ASE Master Tech that handles the shop. So you're in really good hands with these two guys, as well as Kurt himself. So they're at I-17 and Bell in Phoenix on the northeast corner. So if you want to stop by there, you certainly can. Okay, got anything that you want to talk about while we're waiting for callers?
No. Alan's doing that Rubicon trip this weekend. That's a week that sounds kind of crazy to me, where they take Jeeps and they go for 22 miles over 3 days, mm-hmm. over rocks and sleep outside, and I don't know what's fun about that.
Well, we did talk about that he was up there and that he felt as though that they may have asked him to come along because he's done all the work to their Jeeps.
Oh, I got you.
But I think there is something that you brought up that's kind of an amazing thing.
Okay.
There's no Fords in this lineup.
Don't know that. You didn't get the car lineup, so
I'll ask
Alan.
We
don't know.
We do know that they're out of telephone communication.
Yeah.
And like Ray's Jeep, mm-hmm. it's got a Hemi motor in it. It has a blower on it. It has 513 gears because the tires are monster tires. I think it has winches front and rear.
I don't know. It's a beautiful Jeep. I'm surprised that they're taking it, but
he probably won't care if there's a scratch on it, but he will care if he blows one of those front ends off.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then what happens when you blow the front end off of it and you're 10 miles deep in the wilderness? It's not like you can call your towing company.
Yeah, I have no idea who could get back there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they all went together. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I do know his card declined, Alan's card declined, because he's traveling in California and they won't, they are so aware of anything.
You're kidding.
Out of the ordinary.
Oh,
so
no,
I had
that's
to
right.
call. I had to call and okay that.
Was his company card or his personal card?
His company.
Okay, so he tries to use it in California, and they decline it because they think it's stolen.
Yeah, and usually they call, so they must have called the business number, and nobody answered.
Okay,
so
you got the number off the back of your credit card, called them, and how did you tell them, or how did you verify who you are?
Oh, they asked me a million questions.
Okay,
trust
so they so they know. Okay,
yeah.
Well, I've never had that happen.
I have before.
Well, you spent the last 6 years of your life in Magnolia.
No, this was in Las Vegas. I remember
5 years.
I was buying some stuff, and yeah, they called. So
anyway, I want to tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange while we have the time. Phil over at ATE Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. He's on 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. So if you go up and down Washington on your way to and from work, you'll look over there at 40th Street in Washington, and you'll see Automatic Transmission Exchange. Keep in mind, he's been in that location since 1968. He does a really good job in the transmission repair industry. It's take a ride with the customer. Make sure the customer can duplicate the problem. Then you make sure you can duplicate the problem. Then diagnose the problem. Provide an estimate for the problem, repair the problem, and last but not least, go drive it and make sure it's gone. The problem's gone. Feels really good at that. So 40th Street in Washington, if you don't have a transmission shop in Phoenix, then may I suggest Phil over at Automatic Transmission
Cindy
Exchange.
Cindy is your first caller.
Cindy, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hi. I've actually had a problem with my car since I bought it new in 2012, and every time I've taken it in, no one ever seems to recognize the same thing that I do. it's very strange. The very day I drove the car off the lot, brand new, I turned the air conditioner on. It smelled like vomit was coming out of the air conditioner smell, you know, out of the scent. And still now to this day, and the filter's been changed many times, the cabin filter, to this day, you turn it on, and it's right after you turn it on, it still will have that exact same smell. But it smelled like that even when I bought it new.
Okay. Well, let me ask.
When I take it in, they go, oh, we don't notice it when we drive it. So, and it's not every time either, but it's a lot of the time.
Okay. Here's the good news. The good news is you have receipts and records that shows that it dates back to 2012, right?
From when I've asked them, uh-huh.
Yeah. No, and I'm saying you have receipts from the dealer that says this has been a continuing problem since virtually 2012. That means there's no such thing as a termination of that particular issue. Because they didn't fix it when you had a warranty doesn't mean that they can make you fix it if they find it 5 years later. You have documentation. One time, real quick story, one time I had a Suburban, and I had put a blower on the Suburban, which makes this a monster Suburban. Well, I had taken it in numerous times about a clunking noise on the transmission. This is before I ever did any modifications to the engine. So 5 years later, the transmission gives up the ghost. I take it to Henry Brown Chevrolet, and the guy calls me and he says, Mark, I got good news. Well, I got bad news and good news. The bad news is your transmission's gone to transmission heaven. I said, okay, if that's the bad news, what's the good news? And he goes, we're going to pay for it. I said, okay, why? And he goes,
wow.
Because this clunk is directly related to the damage in the transmission. So this bushing bad that caused the main shaft to move forward and backward, and we never got it. And so because the ticket is when you were under warranty, we're covering your entire transmission. And I said, well, can I give you a hug? So anyway, he said no. So in your particular case, here's what I want you to do. I want you to keep it on normal for a week or 10 days. And then I want you to go to recirculation, and I want it there 100% of the time. Every time you start it, every time you shut it off. I want you to tell me if there is a difference in the smell. Because we get air from two different places. On recirculation, the air.
Okay, so are you, when you're saying normal, are you saying normal air conditioning, right?
No, normal.
Not the max.
Normal mode. Don't you
normal
have a
mode,
normal and a maximum, or you have a normal and a recirculation? You should have two different modes.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I want you to hang on to one mode for a week or 10 days or more, and then I want you to hang on to the other mode. Here's the deal. On recirculation, air is taken off the passenger side floorboard. So if the smell is associated with your husband sitting next to you, then it's his feet that are stinking. So the air comes through the floor. It's then cooled off and sent right back into the cab. Are you with me? It's very much like your house.
Uh-huh.
All right. On normal, the grill in front of the windshield, air, it comes over the hood. It's come down into this windshield grate, and it's then cooled and sent into the car. So the air's coming from two different places. So the question is the smell's going to be related to one or the other of those. I need you to figure that out. Now, here's what normally we find the smell. Normally there's a heater core leak on the passenger side. I want you to get in the habit of, after you've driven a long time, let the car sit for about 30 minutes, and if you can, walk out there with your bare hand and rub the carpet on the bottom of the passenger side. If the carpet is wet in any way, shape, or form, if there's any moisture in the carpeting, bingo, you just found the problem. The heater core is behind the glove box, and the heater core is leaking, which is creating the smell. The heater core often leaks inside the ductwork that blows air in your face. So if you find the floorboard wet, we're home free. So as the coolant gets in throughout that ductwork, there's foam that holds everything together. So the coolant gets on the foam, which creates a really stinky, you know, smell. And changing the filter is not going to help that, because the smell is behind the filter. It's after the filter. So work real hard on the plan. Normal, as long as you can stand it. And then maximum or recirculation, those are synonymous words, as long as you can do it. And then I think you're going to find out one is more predominant than the other.
Okay, will do. That's great. Yeah. So do you think that the foam, the part could be bad too, the smelling after the cabin filter like that?
Yes, because that's where it's at. Keep in mind we have this big box, and inside the box we have the heater core that provides hot air, and inside the box we have what we call the evaporator that handles the cold air. You with me?
Okay.
All right. So we have two inlets of air. One comes off the passenger side floor, goes through the filter, and comes into what we call the box. The other one comes through the grate in the windshield and is pumped into the box. So when it gets to the box, it goes across the evaporator. In your case, the air conditioning is on. And then it's blown at the vents. It's blown at you. So we have two different paths in. And so the box, if the heater core goes bad, then it leaks coolant into the box, which is after the cabin filter. It's after the cabin filter, and so therefore there's no smell associated with cabin filters.
Sorry.
So
could this been a problem at the beginning?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that seems weird.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, good luck to you, and let me know what you find out. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I will. Love your show. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All righty, where are we at? We still got time. Hey,
it seems weird that the heater core could be leaking in the beginning, the new one, but
we don't know how bad the leak is or how small the leak is. And as she takes her car in for oil changes and they notice the reservoir's kind of low, they'll just splash some more coolant in there, and one doesn't equal two. Yeah. In the absence of coolant on the ground, in the absence of the customer saying anything, then the technician's not going to sell him a heater core. He's just going to top off the coolant reservoir.
No, I meant when it was bad from the very beginning. She said a new car and it smelled like that.
Yeah.
It's kind
of
odd.
It's not uncommon for somebody to find a dead rat in your dashboard. You know what I mean? Just
You'd
depends
think
on...
it would be gone by now.
Well, it would be hard and it wouldn't smell as bad.
Yeah.
But it's not uncommon. You've heard the stories where people have found a Coke bottle in the door they've had the rattle for 40 years or they found a lunch pail in the truck or in the trunk or whatever. Those stories, those wives' tales exist. So what's the matter? Why are you laughing at me?
Okay.
You're the only one that's allowed to laugh at me. I just want you. Gil's not allowed to laugh at me.
Yeah, he is.
Yes, he is.
I give him permission.
Yeah. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so you're welcome to join us, and we'll get you on at the next break. We're going to be gone for about 3 minutes, and we'll be back right after this. All righty. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Mark Salem, and sitting here with my wife, Renee. She's here just to try to keep me in line, and frankly, she's not doing a very good job.
Oh, no, that's an impossible job.
Yep. All right, well, go ahead and say that. I got two callers, but quick, let me tell you about Air Park Auto Service. They opened in 1985 at the Scottsdale Air Park. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, and Raintree runs east and west, just south of Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard, which is also called Bell Road. Air Park Auto is a state-of-the-art clean and green facility. They have the latest diagnostic tools, the scanners, and they service most makes and models of vehicles and small trucks. And what's good about them is that if they're not the best shop for your problem, they'll tell you so and refer you to someone that they know is better. So if you live in North Scottsdale area, the only shop in North Scottsdale that I put my name next to is Air Park Auto in Scottsdale. All righty, let's go and talk to Don. Don, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, this is Ron. Is that who you want to talk to?
Oh, yeah, he's being funny today. Sorry. Sorry.
Okay. Hi, Mark. Hi. I have a 2000 Chevy Silverado, 5.3 engine, 169,000 miles on it. Where the air goes through the air cleaner on the engine.
Okay.
It goes through a round cylinder that's about 4 inches diameter with wires into it. I'm not for sure what it's called, but does that need any maintenance?
Okay. All right. It's in the air tube, in the air intake system. It's within that tube, and it has wires going to it.
Yes.
Okay. That's called the mass airflow sensor, and the short acronym is M as in Mark, A as in Apple, and F, mass airflow. Yeah. F is in Frank. So here's what that does. The answer to your question is no, it doesn't need any service, but everyone's going to want to sell you, not everyone, but some of the guys are going to want to sell you service, but there are specific symptoms associated with that needing service. For instance, an uneven idle, a fuel economy problem, an O2 sensor code. There's lots of symptoms, but This guy has a very, very small wire. And a lot of people will try to clean their own and they'll break the wire, which costs them anywhere from $100 to $300 for a new mass airflow.
So this little bitty wire is supposed to glow bright red, and the computer monitors how hot it gets, and it by how cool it gets and how hot it stays, the computer knows how much air is being ingested into the engine. So as you can imagine, at idle, the air into the engine is like me blowing air. Okay? But at wide open throttle, you can imagine it sounds like a jet engine inside that tunnel. So the mass airflow sensor tells the computer whether there's a little bit of air or a whole bunch of air, and the computer will then tell the injectors what to do. It'll also tell the timing what to do. So the computer is kind of the central command, but the mass airflow sensor is a really important guy. So you'll almost always have a code with a mass airflow sensor. However, it doesn't mean the MAF sensor is bad. It means that could mean that the pipe behind it, the pipe between the engine and the mass airflow sensor, has a leak. So the mass airflow sensor is no longer seeing all the air that goes to the engine because this crack in the ductwork is allowing unmetered air into the motor. So the mass airflow sensor on a 1 to 10 scale says it's a 6, but in reality the computer's looking at all the other sensors and says it should be an 8. So it says somewhere we're losing this connection because we've got unmetered air coming into the engine. So I hope I've answered your question. What do you think?
That's great. That's great.
Okay.
So if your fuel economy drops from 16 miles to 13 around town, is there a chance that that needs to be cleaned?
That would be one of them, yes. And I would want to plug in a scanner and say to your PCM, I'd say, hey, what are you looking at? What's going on? Let me look at some of those parameters, because we can look at the mass airflow sensor output and we can look at the RPM, and most of us can look and put one and two together. So we can see if it's reporting something. Now, another way to do that is create the leak after it and change the, and see if the mass airflow sensor changes its ability. You could also have some O2 sensors. The O2 sensor is a battery. The battery, as you know, the battery dies. So as the O2 sensor begins to degrade, the oxygen sensor begins to degrade as the battery voltage drops, then it tells the computer, I need more gas. And that's a lie. So the computer opens up the faucet and your fuel economy drops, and everybody says, well, there's lots of reasons. But a lot of times, maybe 35 to 50% of the time, you have what we call a lazy O2 sensor. And I think on your truck, you could have two or four of them. So you only want to find the one that's bad. So there's a lot of reasons for that. But I would probably spend some time and money having someone just give it a good once over. But don't say anything about the mass airflow sensor. Let them tell you that. Okay?
Okay. Good advice. All right. Thanks, Mark.
You betcha. Pete, appreciate it. You bet. Pete, you're next. What can I do for you?
Yes, good morning, Mark. Reason for my call is I have a 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo 4x4. And about 2 months ago, and it's only noticeable that from 0 to maybe 10 or 15 miles an hour, because after that there's enough road noise and car noise, so I make sure the radio is off and air conditioner is off and all that. But what it's happening is there's a click-click. It's a rotational click-click. It's real pronounced at the lower speeds, and obviously as you increase, other noises come in. Now, I've had it in. It's got the extended warranty, and I've had it in. As a matter of fact, it's still in the shop, in a Jeep Chrysler shop. And they told me at first they thought it was I've got it right on here, a rotational half shaft.
Okay.
And they torqued all the fasteners per spec. They put in a new shaft axle with a core return, whatever the hell that is.
Okay.
And and they tried to say that there was no more further noise, but there was. And then when I went back, they told me it was my tires. And I went on the Internet, and I know you ain't supposed to, but I can't believe it's tires.
Okay. Well, let me help you with this. And in two minutes, I'm going to put you on hold because I have to hit a 30-second break. It's too late for them to change their mind. You look them in the eye and say, I'm a little confused. You said that this, and this would take care of my problem, and I'm telling you the exact problem's bad, and now you're going to blame it on something I own, which is the tires.
So I don't feel comfortable about this diagnosis that you're giving me here at the front counter. I don't feel comfortable with your ability to properly diagnose the car. But because you already have my money or my aftermarket warranties company, I think you owe me a second peek at this problem. I need you to help them in this respect. I need you, when that click is there, you said you turned your air conditioning off. Did you just turn the fan off, or did you shut the whole AC down? Can you tell me that?
The whole AC.
Good. Because if you just shut the fan down, the clicking noise could be the compressor freezing up and the clutch going on and off, on and off. So we're going to eliminate that. So the next question is you need to go over to Bash's on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening and make, you know, short right turns at the normal speed that this click is there and make left ones and say it makes it worse on left than the right. You need to come up with something, or it's exactly the same on both sides. Then what you do is you get in an alley and you drive down the road and make it happen, because the noise will bounce off the walls in the alley and you'll have a better idea of what it does that you change. And last but not least, when that happens, I want you to gently apply the brake with your left foot and see if that affects the clicking noise. Stay right there. I'm out in 10 seconds, and we're going to finish this conversation. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Pete some more. All about that. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I've got some business to take care of, and then I'm going to do Pete, Bill, and JT. And you guys stay right there, because I'm going to get y'all. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They've been open since 1976. They have three locations to serve you in the Northwest and the West Valley: Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. At S&S Tire, they have the most comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of the same size. So they have any tire you want for your personal vehicle, plus a tire from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. They're capable of giving you three prices of good, better, best tires for your car. And that should be of help for you to determine what it is that you need. They also balance your tires, and they do alignments and suspension work. So if you're looking for new tires or any alignment or suspension work, then S&S Tire has three locations in the West Valley. Pete, one of the things I want you to work really hard on is learning how to make this click happen. So is it gentle left? Is it gentle right? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it braking? Is it not? Perhaps you start off in low gear if you manually shift it. Is the noise there when you shift into second gear and you're manually taking over the operation of the automatic transmission? Is the noise in one gear and not the other? And then maybe have someone ride with you and have them sit in the passenger side seat and then listen to the noise and then sit in the driver's seat and you guys switch places, and then you can determine whether the noise is on the driver's side of the car or the passenger side. But and when you hear, there's two things that I want to tell you. I think it's a poor representation of our industry to do a bunch of work and then tell you it's your problem. But I also think it's very, very important that the driver of the car be able to show us what the noise is, because it's a bad deal to try to fix a noise that you can't find, because most of the time you're wrong. And that's how this is created. So did all that make sense to you, Pete? Hi, Pete.
Maybe he's gone.
Bill, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning, Bill?
Yeah, hi. I don't know how up you are on the new Mustang that's coming out, but apparently it's got quite a few improvements. I'm just wondering what your take is about spending a little more to get a 2018 with the improvements, as opposed to getting a good deal on a closeout of a 2017.
Well, can you give me an idea of, give me a couple of, two or three of the improvements?
Okay, for one, the automatic transmission is going to be a 10-speed instead of a 6-speed.
Okay.
If you get the V8, it's going to have about 40 extra horsepower. And it's got a lot more electronics. It's got a total electronic dashboard with a lot of information.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Are you likely to be in an environment that's going to benefit from a 10-speed transmission?
Well, I'm not even sure I'd get the automatic. I might get the 6-speed manual, which is the same, I think, on each year.
The electronics across the dashboard and stuff, that's a handsome attraction as far as I'm concerned. The 40 horsepower, 35% of the horsepower gets eaten up by the transition from the back of the engine to the rear differential. So your 40 horsepower turns into 12 at the rear wheels. So I wouldn't let that decide. But the last question is if you can buy the 2018 for the sticker, for you write your check for the sticker, that includes sales tax, license, dock fees, desert protection packages, and all that BS. I know it can be done because I know my daughter did it with our brand new Dodge van. I had a lady buy a 1-ton dually the other day, and she paid sticker for it. Now, they have to pay all those things before the sticker, so otherwise you're going to buy it for the sticker. I think on the 18, you're probably going to pay a bunch more money. I think you're going to save a lot of money on the 17. I think economically speaking, the 17 is better. I don't know that you're going to really take advantage, anybody's going to take advantage of a 10-speed transmission unless they drive in environments that necessitate all of that. It's very likely that from 0 to 55 miles an hour, you're never going to use all 10 speeds, and so therefore...
Oh, no.
You know,
no, a 10-speed is just for cruising.
I do like Mustangs. I think that they're the original hot rod, and I think that you can make a lot of horsepower with them or buy one with it, a lot of horsepower. But to answer your question, I think it's really a matter of price. How much can you
save? Any particular Ford dealer you think is good or especially bad?
Can you email me that question?
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you this. I really like Sanderson Ford. There, so many times
1 minute.
They have pulled a rabbit out of their hat. So many times they've taken the extra effort to take care of somebody. So many times their technicians have fixed cars nobody else could. And there is another Ford dealer that I wouldn't buy a box of Kleenex from because, in my opinion, they stand on the shoulders of others so that they can make themselves look better. And this is something that's been going on a long time. So I didn't develop this idea.
Do they have a store in Peoria, Arizona?
No. So my email address is good. mark@marksalem.com. You send me an email, I'll answer your question. All right, Bill, thank you very much, buddy. JT, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, I want to say that you've helped me. This call is to verify that some of the people you advertise for and suggest we use are, in fact, very good gentlemen. I had the occasion to use one of your outfits here twice recently. Nice people. Cannot tell you how nicely I was treated. Your faith in the shops that you suggest we visit has been totally, totally proven with this instance.
Well,
we're out here in Mesa.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I want to answer your comment. First of all, it's not easy to be on my list. And second of all, if you get a customer complaint, once every 2 or 3 years, that's the minimum I accept. And when you have a customer complaint, you have to deal with it immediately. And I'm involved in that perception and in that process is what I meant to say. And a lot of times the shop will recognize they didn't follow through or they didn't do a good job. And on my website, it clearly says that if you use one of my shops and they don't do what's right, then if you file a nice complaint at the Better Business Bureau, and nice is a big word, a nice complaint, don't call them names, then if the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to give you your money back and the shop refuses, two things happen. Number one, the shop goes off my list, and number two, I'll pay you up to $5,000. So I know every owner personally. I've shaken their hand. I've shook their hand.
And I think you meant to say the maximum is two complaints. You said
minimum.
The minimum.
I'm sorry. The maximum is two complaints. I know each one of them by sight. I have their cell phone numbers. They have my cell phone numbers. And frankly, I want to tell you that I might, out of how many shops do we have right now?
I don't know, 40-some.
I might get one a year. Mm-hmm. And none of them have been to the Better Business Bureau since we started the list in 1988.
Mm-mm.
So I feel pretty good about that. Well, thank you for saying
that. I've run a couple of companies out here over the years. It's nice to get a positive feedback. And I made a point of calling these people and complimenting them on the way they treated me and the way they treated the customers.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and
that's
it occurred
nice.
To me listening to you today that, you know, you're putting your mouth in here and you're back in it too. Why not give you an atta girl
and atta girl, I like that. That's good.
No, JT, you're right.
Thank you for your help. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. You're welcome. JT's right in this respect. I preach to you about what good car repair smells like, looks like, sounds like. Mm-hmm. I talk about processes. A lot of the shops feel pressure about that, and I tell you and I tell everybody else, not every shop does the same thing. That doesn't mean I'm good and they're bad, or that doesn't mean that they're good and I'm bad. We all have different philosophies. But one of the most important thing I want to drive home to you, the listeners, is this. You need to learn how to say this. You need to look them in the eye. You need to pause for effect on a phone call, and you need to say, are you guessing or are you fixing? Because I want to know whose money we're using. And so if they say we're guessing, then you say, well, we must be using your money because we're not using mine to guess on the repair. And so those are the issues right there. If they're fixing, you say, okay, for $212.53, I'm not going to have this problem, right? That means you're fixing and not guessing. So that those words right there work in every single environment, I promise you. We'll be back right after this. All righty. Welcome back, everybody. 47 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about Action Auto Repair. Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, has been a personal friend of mine since probably the late 70s or early 80s. I know him well. He's an honest, good guy. He serves the Deer Valley area and North Phoenix area since 1983. He's on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. So he has ASE Master Technicians. They get the job done right. They diagnose it right. They make sure that their repair is right, and they understand what they're doing and why. So you can make informed decisions. That information is very important. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair is a great place to go. And, hey, let me tell you, ask you a question the other day. I'm talking to a friend of mine named Dan.
Okay.
And I can hear the wind whistling by his
right.
phone,
uh-huh.
you know, like that. Then all of a sudden, I hear a door slam, and there's a heck of an echo.
Okay.
And I say to him, where are you?
Oh, stop it. Who cares?
But other people have had that happen, and maybe they didn't know what was going on.
Well, some people might not even get what you're talking about.
Well, he clearly went to the bathroom,
So what?
The echo was there. Well, I thought it was pretty cool that I caught him on it, and he did too. He goes, how in the heck did you know? And I said, well, it's just the sound changes so
you're
dramatically.
You're such a detective.
Oh, knock it off.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Pete, good morning to you. I understand we didn't finish our conversation, so I'm happy to help you.
Yeah, at the most critical time, too. The phone. I got me another phone here. Now, yeah, because, Mark, you gave me a couple of good advices, and I called you because I'm supposed to meet with their mechanic at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I was told by the advisor that he's only heard a click once, and they know that I'm going up north this next week, Monday, and I like to do four-wheeling, and, you know, I mean, I'm not a real, but it's trail-rated, and I like taking the back roads, and I told them I don't want this car breaking down where there's no radio service, and God knows where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And now she told me, the advisor told me, the mechanic said, no, the car will not break apart, but he's, I'm getting a little bit of what you were saying before, guessing or fixing, and I think I'm getting more guessing than fixing.
Yeah.
So
he can't.
Let me repeat for a minute.
All right, hold on just a minute.
And I want him.
Just hold on for a second. Pete, he can't say that your car is safe unless he knows what it is causing this. So. I wouldn't accept the fact that he knows you won't break down because he doesn't know what it is. So I just wanted to say that. But go ahead and finish your thought.
No, that kind of stuck in my mind too, which I'm going to tell them. Are they going to send a dog rescue after me, or what's going to happen if I'm somewhere where I don't have the cell service? All right, now I like your thing of you're saying. Now I did go here a few days ago with their so-called quality man, and he put me through, well, he didn't hear it until he got into the driver's side, and then he heard it, and we both had an argument of what side the noise was coming from. He had the windows down, up, but he never did what you were talking about, turning left and then turning right and doing it where, you know, in an alley-type atmosphere where the noise can kind of reverberate and so forth. Now, I did like that. The only thing he came up with is he thinks it's somewhere in the drivetrain because it sounds like it's in the center, somewhere in the center. But now they've had that car. This is, they've had it since Thursday, and they've had it all the time. And I was just told by the advisor that for me to meet with this guy at 2 o'clock today and go on a road test.
Okay.
So I know you were going to give me a little more information on what we should do, and that's when
he should sit and listen to you, and he should let you drive. Having him drive it is not there's no progress there. You have to go drive it, and you have to show him what you're talking about. You have to make it happen. And if you have to keep him for 20 minutes, then you keep him for 20 minutes. As a matter of fact, if I were you, I'd hop on the I-17 and just head north and say, we're going to go to Flagstaff, or we're going to hear this noise, and I hope you have money for lunch. That's what I'd say, but that's called kidnapping.
Or dinner, so
I wouldn't necessarily do that. But the idea is, I mean, another thing, I was thinking about this. It could be the speedometer cable, and if it's the speedometer cable clicking, then I want you to put the back of your hand against the face of your instrument panel, the plastic in front of your speedometer. I want you to put the back of your hand there because you can feel if the speedometer is causing a click. But that's what has to happen. Take him for a drive. Make a sweeping right. Make a sweeping left. Take it back behind bashes. Do circles to the right. Do circles to the left. Go fast. Go slow. Hold it in first gear. Hold it and then shift it to second. Shift it to third. Turn the air on. Turn the air off. Just run it through its paces and show him. If the two of you can't agree on which side it is, that's a problem. Because either it's in the middle, or one of you is just simply, mistaken is a nice word. So you guys have to do that, but he can't put you at some kind of fake, ease by saying, oh, it's not going to break down because he doesn't know what it is. So good luck to you, Pete. I wish you well. There used to be one of the best drive shaft guys, one of the best noise guys in the whole wide world. He's recently retired. But I used to lean on him a lot. And Pete, I want to tell you this. Only one time in my entire life with Leon was I ever right. and he just had this uncanny ability to diagnose vibrations and noises and stuff. And only one time was I right. And of course, I've never let him forget that. But if you can just learn how to make it happen, and insist that you drive and he sit next to you, and certainly you decide whether the windows are up or down, whether the noise is inside or out, and stuff like that. That's your job. All righty. Now, if you'd like to have a conversation with me, or if you want to ask me a question, my email address is pretty simple. It's mark@marksalem.com. If you want to look at our website that has the best car repair shops in Phoenix that has existed since 1988, then you can go to marksalem.com. If you have a car that no one's been able to fix or a problem and you would like some advice about who you might take it to, I'm willing to do that as well. Obviously, I can't guarantee the outcome, but I can tell you where I'd send my mother. And I do love my mother. So I know, can't say that about my wife sometimes, but I do love my mother. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing.
Anyway, I'm proud to tell you that many times the geographical area that I am responsible for is Tempe, mm-hmm. Ahwatukee, Chandler, Gilbert, and that's about all.
Yeah.
Queen Creek.
Yeah.
That's the geographical area that my shop is in. And we have no other shops in that area that have been able to pass the muster, so to speak. So I'm blessed by you honoring me when you drive a long way. I'm blessed that we actually can pull a rabbit out of our hat every once in a while. I'm really proud of my guys. And I can tell you this much. I'm not the only shop owner in town that insists that the technicians work at a specific level. So there are three things. It's yes, I can fix it. No, I can't duplicate. But the third option is not available. I'm going to guess with your money. That doesn't happen. If you want to guess, you need to tell them you're going to guess. Here's a good guess. Mrs. Jones, your car is dying and stalling, but I can't really have it. I can't get it to happen to me. Now, Mrs. Jones in the distributor is a component. It's called a pickup assembly. And they have seven different colors of them, with white being the oldest and then yellow being the newest. Mrs. Jones, this causes exactly the same symptoms you're experiencing intermittently. Mrs. Jones, I want to replace that pickup, and your bill is going to be $112 parts and labor. But Mrs. Jones, I want you to understand I'm guessing with your money, with your permission, and with your money. I'm thinking this is what I do to my mom's car. I'm thinking this is going to be it, but I can't promise you that I'm fixing. I can only promise you I'm guessing. So this is the most educated guess I can offer you. It's going to cost you $112, Mrs. Jones. Do you want time to think about it, or do you want to tell me now, or do you want to call me
back?
That's what a guess sounds like. Because the sin of it is we guess with your money and we don't fix your car. Then we guess with your money and we still don't fix your car. And you can't just generally tell everybody, oh, they're really good people and I love them and they've always been good to me, after you spent $200, $300, $400 and never moved closer to the center of your circle. So our industry is better than that. There are lots of shops in this valley that can work on cars and do a good job. And the process is simple. Get the symptoms from the customer. Test drive the automobile and duplicate the symptoms. Prepare an estimate, worst case scenario. Present the estimate, get the authority. Order the parts, fix the car, and the last part is the most important part. Go drive it the way you drove it before, and make absolutely certain that the symptom you went in to fix is gone. So that's the path. And
1 minute.
And it's just not me. There's a lot of other guys out there that follow that path. So, again, my email address is mark@marksalem.com, or you can go to our website. It's called salemboysauto.com, or you can go to marksalem.com. There's lots of different URLs that we have that point to the same thing. I think we even have bestcarrepairshopsinphoenix.com.
Yeah, bestcarrepairshops.
So, anyway, I appreciate you spending your Saturday with me. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 12, and we enjoy the company, and hopefully you get something here that will save you money down the road. I want to tell you, too, that it's important to wear your seatbelt, because time and time again I'm involved in cases where somebody wasn't wearing their seatbelt. And just let me tell you, it's too late to try to buckle it when the guy in front of you turns in front of you. It's just too late to reach down and buckle it. So that's an important consideration. And I want to tell you, too, that your chances of dying with no seatbelts are a whole bunch more than if your belt is butted, your belt is buckled at the accident.